Well, Dr. Carl, thank you for coming today to talk about your role in the history of the Williamsport Technical Institute and the Williamsport Area Community College. You were the founding president of that institution, both of which were forerunners for the present Pennsylvania College of Technology. It's a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to you about your influence on the lives of so many individuals, both students and staff. As a high school student, you started out in electrical technology. However, you eventually switched to drafting. What were the influences in your life that drew you to drafting?
I had an uncle who was an architect, and I admired his work, and I still have copies of some of these things that he made. And he practiced in Florida, and go down there and work, set up shop and design houses and so on for people and so on. And then he came back up to the farm up at Roaring Branch, and for some reason he fell in the barn and killed himself. I'm sure he didn't do it on purpose, but and I'm sure I missed that some of these things that he could tell me about.
Did you do any internships or work anywhere in the field of drafting as you were developing your skills?
Did I what?
Did you work anywhere in the field of drafting after you studied drafting?
Yeah. Yeah. Then we had a cooperative program. You spent 2 weeks in lessons here and 2 weeks in your trade or occupation. And then alternate like that throughout the year. And there's supposed to be another boy alternating with you, so that when you're in classes, then he's in the drafting department, and vice versa.
Where did you do your internship or co-op? What employer were you working at?
Up at Avco, Lycoming Division. Lycoming Motors at that time.
So that was one of the major employers here in Williamsport.
Oh,
in that
definitely.
Time period.
Definitely.
And a manufacturer, the things they were making were aircraft engines, is that right?
Well, they also marine engines. They had a number of different kind of industrial engines, but the primary then and automotive motors too. Yeah.
When you were hired in 1937 at the Williamsport Technical Institute to teach students who had physical handicaps, since you did not have any formal training in working with people who had handicaps,
how did you prepare
yourself to do that?
That's true. What this was a state program where the state paid all the costs. And it was for handicapped people. And no one seemed to know anything about training handicapped. And of course, in drafting, I didn't see anything wrong with any reason why any handicap would be involved, because if you had a leg off, it wouldn't make any difference. You sit at a table and do your drawing. I remember, I think I had a one-arm man. He had a good arm. He could letter and draw with that one arm and use his stub to hold the instruments down on the table when he draws. And so I became quite interested in trying to help the handicapped that way. And most every type of handicapped person except the blind, I could help with that, as long as he had use of one good arm. Yeah.
So you developed real special expertise in this field of vocational education for people with physical handicaps. And in 1951, you developed the Vocational Diagnostic Program,
right,
which gained national attention for its effectiveness in helping people with physical handicaps, and also in making career choices and educational choices. How did you go about developing that program?
Well, it sort of grew on me as we went along, because I started off doing some of the same thing without a program for it, so to speak, and we just wandered into it, then finally set up this program. The big part of it was that we could try you out in several things, and we set up a month course in this, and would spend a couple of days in the four or five things that you could do with your handicap. And might be auto mechanics, might be electrical, might be a pattern maker or a machinist, or a draftsman. And we tried those each out for a few days. And then at the end of the, we set it up for a month. At the end of the month, then we had a final conference with all of the people involved. Someone from each of the shops that you attended, and how well you did there, and whether in their opinion you could be a success in that occupation. And that gave them as many as five different choices to decide which one they would like to get in. And so that plus your psychological testing, which we did too, we decided which would be best for them, and they did too. And we didn't force anybody into anything. We wanted them to do it. And it seemed to go over very well. And so it gradually expanded and expanded until we had quite a program in that. And I think it was followed by several other places who got our idea from us and started doing the same thing there at their school. Vocational Diagnostic Program, we call it.
So did other schools then come and visit what you were doing here, or at least contact you?
Not too much. There wasn't very many going on with adult education for any type of handicapped person, other than the Johnstown Center for Vocational Rehabilitation, which was run by the state of Pennsylvania. And they wanted me to come out there, but I didn't decide, no, I'll stay here.
Well, it's good for us you stayed here. It's good for us that you stayed here. You worked then with the State Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation, is that right?
No, I had membership with them, and they put me in some kind of office. I can't remember what it was anymore. Just on paper.
But this was a pioneering program. This was a pioneering program in not only Pennsylvania, but also in the nation. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes, as far as we knew. Yes?
Well, as a result of this and your commitment and expertise in vocational rehabilitation, you received a national award in 1966 for educational excellence in working with persons in handicap. Would you describe the occasion of that award ceremony?
Well, I was called to come to Denver and tell them all about it, and which I did. And of course, I got the time off without any problem locally. Yeah. It was quite a thrilling situation.
That was very special for you.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was one of the high points in your career, is that correct?
That's for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
As head of the drafting department of the Williamsport Technical Institute, you led the expansion of types of drafting that were taught. What were some of the programs that were added?
Oh, well, it was architectural and tool and die design and technical illustration, which was, you worked according to who you had with you. And if this person had technical illustration, he taught that while he was hired as a drafting instructor. It was part of drafting, but it was turning it more or less into illustrating cutaway views and so forth, which was used in the publication of various booklets and so on about the products that this company made, and helped them on booklets on how to repair and what to look for, and the part numbers and so on was all illustrated in that kind of work, as well as exploded views showing how it goes together and so on. Yeah.
Did you work with any particular businesses or industries as you developed those various programs in drafting? For example, did AFCO encourage the Technical Institute to add those various forms of drafting, or other firms?
Not really. They come in and visited and gave us some hints and how we could add to it and so on. Of course, that's where we had to look for instructors. There were some places there weren't very many technical illustrators, for example. And we were just fortunate that Ray McIntyre, who was our prime technical illustrator, happened to come in and look for a job. And he was, of course, a draftsman as well.
Did you, of the various forms of drafting, what did you personally enjoy teaching the most? Which form of drafting?
Well, mechanical drafting was the main thing, which was primarily what AVCO was, and engines and so on, was all mechanical drafting.
Was there something about that that you particularly enjoyed? Besides the fact that you had done that at AVCO, was there something about mechanical drafting that really maybe excited you?
Well, you had the feeling that you were doing something that would go into this engine or be a part of it, and so you had a part in building engines. Even though you didn't actually work with the actual parts.
So the satisfaction was in the contribution you felt you were making.
Right.
Were you ever tempted to go back to what your uncle had done with architectural drafting?
Not really. I guess I was confirmed to mechanical draft.
That was your area of expertise.
Yeah.
Good, thank you. What were the facilities and equipment like in those years of teaching in the Williamsport Technical Institute?
Well, of course, you work with a T-square, but in industry, you had a drafting machine. I finally got some in the school, so I could give the students practice on using a drafting machine, which is handier and perhaps a little time saving.
What was a drafting machine in those days?
What
was a drafting machine like? What was?
Well, it consisted of arms that were fastened up at the top of your drawing board, and it come down two pieces, and then here it was a circle, and then two pieces down to the actual machine, and there you could change the rulers. You could have one or two and perfectly 90-degree angles, and you just move that up and draw and move it up and draw the other way with that, and you do it much easier than reaching over and grabbing a T-square or a parallel bar. A parallel bar was another one, but you had to use a protractor with it because it didn't have a protractor with the parallel bar. And so the drafting machine was a preferred situation. Of course, not all companies had them, because they did cost some money. Yeah.
How did you go about, since they cost some money, how did you go about acquiring them for the Williamsport Technical Institute?
Well, you have to convince them that let's try one and see how it goes here, and then you can see what it's like. And then gradually we requisitioned a couple more next year, every year, until we build them up.
So you had to purchase them then, is that right?
What?
They weren't donated, you had to purchase them?
Oh, yeah, we had to purchase them. No donations.
When you became director of the Williamsport Technical Institute, did you make sure drafting had its drafting machines?
It had them pretty well then.
That's a far distance form of drafting from today's computer-aided drafting. Do you have any feelings about computerized drafting today?
About
the use of computers in drafting today?
Not really. No.
The facilities you use, where were you teaching the drafting classes?
Oh, in the rear end of the auto shop, Susquehanna Street. I had a shop in there, and I was in the old gymnasium in the high school, which was down in the basement. And that was where I started with my classes. And I gradually filled that thing up. And then we moved over to the auto shop and took over about, well, the auto shop was 80 feet wide, and we took at least 60 feet in length. So that was the size of our drafting room.
When did drafting move to the Unit 6 or the old trolley barn? When did that occur? Do you recall?
Well, when we took over the car barn, when the school district acquired that car barn, then we found a spot there and moved the drafting room out of the auto shop over there.
Was that partly because numbers were expanding? The number of students taking drafting, was that increasing?
Yes.
Well, let us move, thank you. Let us move to your time as the director of the Williamsport Technical Institute. How did you feel when you first became director of the Williamsport Technical Institute in 1952?
Well, I had quite a job.
Did you have some sense of vision of what you wanted to help the Williamsport Technical Institute become?
I suppose it entered in a little way. But not really.
You wanted to continue then the programs that had existed, that the Williamsport Technical Institute had developed. You wanted to continue those programs, is that correct?
I was teaching what?
You wanted to continue the programs that already existed when you became director of the Institute?
Yeah.
Well, you started, or many new programs started while you were director of the Williamsport Technical Institute. Can you recall some of the programs that
were
added?
Yeah, heavy construction equipment. The main thing was to find an instructor who was willing to teach boys how to repair a bulldozer and so on, you know? And then we got started with a couple bulldozers, a government surplus. That was a big issue in helping to get some of these courses started. The government had excess heavy equipment due to the war being over, and they didn't need it anymore. So they put it up for first to schools to help them if they could use it. And so we could use most anything. So we had trucks going to Harrisburg quite often to bring home surplus equipment. That's everything you can think of, you know.
Did you go down sometimes yourself to Harrisburg?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Can you recall a trip where you were really excited about some equipment you acquired? Can you recall a trip in which you acquired some equipment about which you were very excited?
Well, yes. One was the school bus. We got an old Navy bus that we needed, and we didn't have any money to buy one, so we got this. And then our other shop overhauled it, and away we go. That was just one thing, but we got into watch repairing, watchmaker, because we found an instructor for it. Not that we particularly thought we needed it, but it would be excellent for handicapped people. And so there was a school for watch repairing at Lancaster, been operating for years. So we sort of went into it as a competitor, but not really.
In those days, were you drawing your students mostly from this north central area of the state? In the days, in your early years as director of the Williamsport Technical Institute, were your students coming mostly from this north central part of the state?
Well, they came from all over the state. There were nine different divisions or sections of the Pennsylvania Bureau of Rehabilitation. Of course, we get the ones from this district. And then gradually the others came in too, because they heard that we were getting results, and they felt that they would like to get into it. So they sent, and particularly with this diagnostic program, they'd send people here for 1 month for that program to see what they could find, what we could find for them to do, and what they would like to do. And many times we didn't offer anything in that line, but it was that they desired to study it, and so it helped all the different divisions that way.
So it sounds like there were several factors influencing the choice of new programs. One was the availability of instructors, people to teach, but another was the interest, particularly of students who were in vocational rehabilitation. Is that correct?
Yeah.
How did the service and operation of heavy construction equipment, how did that start? You referred to that a few minutes ago.
Well, first we had to find an instructor who was willing to do this, which we did. Clyde Brass, his name, lived up at Cogan Station, and he come down and came on the program, and we set up a little shop, he run that, and then we added to it as we got more people, more students, you know. Yeah. And it went over very well.
You had some other programs that you started. Sign painting was a program you started, correct? Sign painting?
Yeah.
How did you start that?
We got Bill Best locally. He was a friend of mine. He was a sign painter. And then he was also a neon man. So we started a neon course, making neon signs as well as regular sign painting. And when you put the two together for a sign painting neon program, and that went over very well.
That was fairly unique then, I would imagine, for a technical institute to have a combined program, particularly with neon. This would have been the 1950s when neon had become very popular, is that right? When neon signs had become very popular?
Yeah.
How about the practical nursing program? That was an important beginning for the college.
Practical nursing? We found a nursing teacher who was all gung-ho to really do a job. She did a wonderful job. And then we expanded it as we found more teachers. And had a program then with Williamsport Hospital, Divine Providence first. Williamsport wasn't going to, they had a regular degree program of nursing, and they weren't going to take on this practical nursing program because it might affect their four-year program. And so we went to Divine and started this with Sister Emily practical nursing. And then finally, Williamsport saw how successful it was at Divine, and then they wanted to start, so we started a program with them, too.
So you were able to win over the acceptance of Williamsport Hospital at that time?
Yeah. And Divine.
And Divine. You also had a program in cosmetology. What about adding that program?
Well, that program went over wonderful with girls who wanted to learn cosmetology to go into business for themselves or get a job in a shop. And there wasn't a lot of academic work with that, but it was more practical, and it went over very well.
So that was a program aimed for high school students or post-secondary students?
That was a program
possibly for high school students?
I think we started out with adults, and then we added a high school program.
Okay. Thank you. Any other programs that you recall that were you added and were important to you in those WTI days?
Well, another one was pattern making, wood pattern making. We had several plant companies here who hired them to make wood patterns, and they had to understand how the pattern would be put in the foundry in the sand, and how the pattern could come apart to take it out, and yet to leave the impression that you wanted, and it was very successful.
So this was for metal casting in local foundries. Pattern making was for metal casting in local foundries. Is that
yeah.
right? Can you recall some of the local businesses that were particularly interested in hiring students?
Well, there was only one or two in the pattern making, because that's all we had here. But we could go over to Berwick to AC&F, and they had made some patterns and some of their work there, and they were interested in hiring some of these boys. Yeah.
Any other programs that were, because pattern making was unique in many ways to that time period, I suppose, compared to some of the techniques of today. What about sheet metal? Was sheet metal also a program?
Oh, sure, sure. Well, all of these are tied into where are you going to get a job? And we had to research this and make sure that we were just not training people for sake of training them, that they were actually going on a job. When they got through.
So this reflects a time in which fabrication was done a lot by hand, is that correct?
Yes.
The 1950s, still fabrication, things were made by hand, a lot of that, rather than machine made, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
The machining program was quite large. Machine shop program was very active in that time period, too.
Well, Lycoming Motors was a big factor. Darling Valve was another one, and Muncie, a couple plants there.
Sprout Waldron.
Sprout Waldron, yeah.
What about the welding program? That also was very active. Welding was taught.
Yeah, three shifts.
You remember the location where welding was taught?
And then I had to get up in the middle of the night and go visit the third shift once in a while. I didn't do it every day.
That was taught in the basement of the shops, wasn't it, on Susquehanna Street? Welding? Welding was taught in the basement, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And well, vocational agriculture started in the basement. Sheet metal shop was started in the basement. And then they moved up when we found room for them.
The basement, a wonderful place to teach in. Speaking of vocational agriculture, you eventually developed a program called The Farm out toward Muncie. Would you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, they gave us the use of their farm to teach agriculture. This was an ideal situation, a lovely farm, and of course, we didn't get any profits out of it. The farm owner got the profits. But
so you were using someone else's farm to teach students. Is that correct?
Yeah, what?
You were using someone else's farm to teach the students?
Yeah.
And that farm, if I'm correct, was located near the present Lycoming Mall? Was the farm located near where the mall is today?
It was across the road.
Across the road.
Across the road. All of it, from there to the river. And it was a couple hundred acres that we had. And we could take some, we took our bulldozers down and cut a new road in for them to make it better for a school bus to take a load of students down. And wherever we could use other things to help, you know, do that sort of thing, we did.
And you also talked about using land for forestry, land that Dr. Parks owned, is that correct?
Yeah.
Did you talk about that?
Well, he didn't have a farm. He had a couple hundred acres over in Morgan Valley that he bought and was largely timber. And so we built a getaway place, building, and then we'd have groups go over, and then they'd go into this building for classes and lectures and so on, see movies, what have you. And that was very good.
And that land is now the property that Dr. Parks donated to the college where the college retreat is. Am I correct? You have mentioned a number of businesses like Avco and Darling Valve and a few others. What type of support did, in addition to those firms, what type of support did the Williamsport Technical Institute have from business and industry regarding maybe donation of money or equipment?
From these industries?
Yes.
Well, of course, they realized that if they were going to get people trained on machines like they use, that we ought to have one up there in our shop. And sometimes they'd give us one and help us influence the school board that we ought to have this for the training.
Can you think of a major donation from a particular local business or industry in those years?
Not really too much. Avco gave us some machinery for the machine shop. Darling Valve gave us a couple woodworking machines for the pattern making. I guess the sheet metal shops gave us a few pieces of sheet metal equipment. We could get whatever we could wherever.
Well, you've touched on something I think that's very important, and that is that the Williamsport Technical Institute was really owned, if you will, by the Williamsport School District. So it had very limited funds for operation.
Right.
And yet the Williamsport Technical Institute had achieved statewide and really national prominence in the 1950s. So did you get any support or encouragement from businesses outside of this local area?
Oh, we got some from the State Department of Harrisburg, who furnished some money to buy equipment from different shops.
Let's move on to the Williamsport Area Community College and that pivotal role that you played in the creation of that institution. When you were pursuing your doctorate at Penn State, Your dissertation focused on community college education systems. How did you choose that topic for your dissertation?
When I what?
When you were at Penn State,
yeah,
working on your doctorate,
yeah,
you wrote your dissertation on community college systems. How did you choose that topic?
Well, that wasn't very hard to do because that was what we're particularly interested in, was to get moving along with more adult education. And
the community colleges were still fairly new in that time period.
Yeah.
1950s.
Yeah.
So you had a vision that the Williamsport Technical Institute could be something more, and that Pennsylvania, which did not have a community college system at that time, so you were, if you will, a visionary in that regard. What states did you study as part of that doctoral work?
What
state systems for community colleges did you study?
Study? Oh, Texas, New York, Colorado, Florida were the main ones. And
did any of those in particular attract you as a good state model?
Pardon?
Did any of those state systems attract you as a particularly desirable model for Pennsylvania?
I mean, do they want to hire me?
Well, that may have been too, but they missed
their
chance.
We've had a few offers.
Huh? I'm sure.
A group from New York State, can't think of the name of the town, and it's in western part of New York State, right above the border.
Olean?
Huh? Yeah.
Olean
wanted to hire me as a director of vocational education. Come up there. A little bit more money than here, and
so it was tempting, I'm sure. What was your involvement in the creation of the community college system in Pennsylvania?
What was
your involvement in the creation of the community college system in Pennsylvania?
Well, we didn't have any community colleges.
Right.
Right. And we tried to get one started, and I went around and talked to all the school boards within a commutable distance and tried to see whether they were interested in joining with us to form a community college. And of course, they were worrying about costs and that sort of thing, but I assured them it wouldn't cost them too much per student. And of course, if they had quite a few students there, that would be wonderful for their population to be so so educated that they could do so many different things.
So when you were visiting those school boards, that was after the Community College Act had been signed, is that correct?
I think so.
Governor Scranton gave you a pen that he used, yeah, to sign the Community College,
yeah,
Act.
Yeah.
Do you remember receiving that pen?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
how you felt? Oh,
I looked at it the other day. Bill Scranton.
That brought back memories of your doctoral studies and
Yeah.
Your vision had become real.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to then when you helped change the Williamsport Technical Institute into becoming the Williamsport Area Community College, which it did in 1965. Can you remember some school boards that were particularly encouraging of creating the Williamsport Area Community College, or WAC as it was known?
A couple school board members were not too much in favor of it, but the rest were. And so the rest voted it in. And but you always had those few dissenters that didn't quite think it was going to work. Yeah.
Well, crucial to that would have been the decision of the Williamsport School District, correct?
That's right.
And so what went on with the Williamsport School District?
Yeah.
How did the Williamsport School District respond?
Very well. They would have assured that the governing board would consist of school board members from various. We set up an election situation where school boards would nominate a person for the board, and there would be several of these, and then all the school boards would vote on them. And of course, some of them, they didn't know them from Adam, you know. But it came along very well.
Well, one of the features of the community college here in Williamsport was that it provided both high school or secondary vocational education and post-secondary education. How important was that in getting school districts to agree to sponsor the...
Well, not too important. A couple of them had been working with us in Montoursville, Jersey Shore, and so on, real close. They had bus service every day, bringing students in. But the districts further away, they didn't do that. And so they had to wait for their students to graduate from their own school.
But then once they became part of WAC, they were sending students from Sullivan County and from the Northern Tier?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we had quite a few from Sullivan County. Buses every day.
You did the role of the superintendent of Williamsport School District. That person play any role in helping the community college come into existence?
Not really. Not really. He didn't hinder it, but he didn't push it either.
Do you remember your discussion? The superintendent at that time was Dr. Worcester, is that right?
Oh, this was before him.
Before him, okay. How was the seal for the college that was used for WAC? How was that created?
Our instructor in technical illustration developed the seal. At least his class, I don't know who actually did it, but they finally wound up with a recommended seal which we adopted. And then we had that seal from then on.
Why was it important to you and to education for the citizens of Pennsylvania to shift from being a technical institute to a community college?
Well, it took care of many more students that were interested in other programs, not technical in nature. Who were interested in becoming a librarian or anything else. Yeah.
So it broadened the understanding of vocational, is that right?
Pardon?
It broadened the understanding of what it meant to be vocational.
Right. Right.
And you also began then to offer programs that allowed students to transfer to other colleges for bachelor's degrees.
Then we developed our own bachelor's degree program. Expanded from a 2-year to a 4-year program.
Right, that came later when it became part of Penn State.
That's right.
Right. How important to you was it, in your understanding, that a student would be able to have an associate's degree as an alternative to receiving a certificate?
How important to me?
In your vision of what education, higher education meant, the idea of an associate's
degree. Well, it certainly was more than a high school graduate. While not as much as a regular 4-year college person, it did help some.
What was the response of political leaders and the local newspapers to either WTI or WAC? How did they respond?
Well, you always have a few that are against it. But they're overridden by the ones who really want it.
The importance of students receiving associate's degrees.
Yeah.
Why was that important to you?
Well, it was another step up the ladder. While it wasn't a 4-year degree, it was a part way there, and they could still keep on going if they wanted to.
So that was vital to the mission of the college with the idea of lifelong learning, is that right?
Yeah.
And your own sense of lifelong learning in your own personal life?
Yeah.
Okay. As part of the associate degrees programs, you had to add some general education courses.
Yeah.
What was involved there?
Well, it was largely math and science that we'd be adding.
You had to hire new faculty?
Pardon?
You had to hire new faculty?
Well, additional, yeah. Not all, some we had were already ready to teach it.
Well, you hired a vice president of academic affairs, Herschel Jones.
Yeah.
And what was his role then in adding the general education part?
Well, since he was connected to Bucknell, I had him check and make sure that we were teaching us on a college level and some of these programs. And Hirsch was a good man on that job. Yeah.
Was there influence from a trustee at Bucknell to hire Herschel Jones?
Oh, the admiral. Yeah. Well, he's the one that helped push Hurst Jones to come with us. And he's on the Bucknell board as well, retired admiral.
Let's go back to, let's talk about the influence of political leaders. Herm Schnabley, what was his influence? The congressman from this area and a resident of Williamsport.
Yeah.
You named the Earth Science Building after him.
Yeah. He helped us get that land over there from the government surplus. See, they used that. It was part of the ordinance situation. But this part of it, they didn't really use for that situation. So we didn't have any trouble getting the federal government to give us that land.
What were the greatest challenges that WAC faced when you were president?
I guess getting local people to understand what we were about. And some school board members. And particularly when the call came for votes by school boards, to try and get them to understand what it's all about.
Because you had to get 20 school boards to approve your budget each year, is that correct?
Yeah.
You had to get 20 school boards?
Yeah.
Do you remember any?
Yeah, and of course they had to approve my budget, and it was no longer just Williamsport. I mean, it was Montoursville, Jersey Shore, Lock Haven, down the road, all over, and all of these districts, a majority had to approve the budget.
So you had to do a lot of traveling. You had to travel to those school boards.
Oh, yeah.
Do you recall your vision for the future of the community college campus with the first master plan that you developed around 1970?
Oh, I think I worked on all kinds of different plans.
Well, it was planned for what was called the wraparound building. The wraparound building, the building that was going to go in front of the current shops and then down 3rd Street.
Not too much down 3rd Street, but you keep it in this general area.
Well, as you look at the campus today and think back to your vision, do you see some of the things that you were projecting for the future of the college to be realized today, and how do you feel about that?
Fine, let's go.
Do you have a vision for the future for the college?
When
you're 150, would you like to see something here at the college?
Pardon?
In the future, is there something you'd like to see and for the college?
Well, I got a new library coming.
Let's move to the first WAC graduation. The first graduation for the Williamsport Area Community College. That was an important day in your life, both because it was the first graduation, but there were some other things happening in your family. Do you remember that day?
In my family?
One of your daughters getting married that afternoon?
Oh, Marilyn. Yeah, that's right.
So you had a busy day.
Huh?
You had a busy day.
Ah, that's right.
Well, what do you see as your greatest and most enduring contribution to higher education here at the college and in Pennsylvania? What are you most proud of?
Well, the bringing together of the vocational and the academic departments and melding them into a one school. And I think that was the main situation here. And I think we're seeing the success of that now at the enrollment picking up all the time.
So that was quite a challenge to meld the vocational and the academic.
Yeah.
And you see that as a foundation for it enabled the current Pennsylvania College of Technology to do what it is doing. I understand that a number of your family members have attended the college and its predecessors.
The number of what?
Some of your family have attended this college and its predecessors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, on a personal note, when you retired, you became active in the area of wood carving.
Yeah.
In fact, I see a wooden bird as your tie clip. I'm assuming you made that. So you have a wonderful talent that blossomed after you retired. How did that develop? And what were maybe some influences in your interest in bird carving and in your interest in wood?
Well, I was always, in the sixth grade, I was president of the bird club in the fourth grade. And I guess from that time on, I've good feeling for birds.
So at that early in your life, there were two signs of your future, that is one of administrative leadership and the other being your talent and interest in birds. That's nice. Is there anything else you would like to add? How do you feel as you see the growth of the college?
Oh, just wonderful. In fact, I just made a donation to help this library, and it's really quite a library that they're building. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Carl, I want to thank you for sitting down and sharing with us some of your memories.
Yeah.
And you very justifiably should be proud of and take a sense of good feeling for the role you played, both beginning as a pioneer in vocational rehabilitation and education, the second of two directors for the Williamsport Technical Institute, having the vision for community college education in Pennsylvania, and then the real challenge that you rose to in creating a community college here in North Central Pennsylvania, serving 10 counties and 20 different school districts. And as you said yourself, one of your great satisfactions is that you were able to meld the rich tradition here in Williamsport of vocational technical education with academic education, and that created this foundation for the institution we see today, and hopefully it's a continuing future. So thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome. If you think of other questions that come up, if you want to see if I know I have any answers, why, give me a ring.
And I'll do that.
And figure out. It's just been a tremendous life. No question about it.
Well, thank you for sharing it with so many people.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that they've taken off on that trial period situation where you try a number of things and then make up your mind which one you want. And we've used that for the non-handicapped as well as the handicapped. He didn't have any idea what he wants to do. Well, how do you find out?
Well, I think that's a nice way to close in reference to your approach to vocational education for the physically handicapped was to allow a person to explore and to find their interest and then to develop that. And now the college, with its wide range of programs, both certificate, associate, and bachelor degree, offers students from all over the state and from this region to do the same. Thank you so much.